Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a blonde Oompa Loompa to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is kettle logic.
Yeah, so kettle logic is kind of a weird name for a fallacy.
Yeah.
It comes from an anecdote that Freud told in The Interpretation of Dreams.
Okay.
It wasn't actually something that happened in real life. It was a story that he was using to illustrate something, which was about a person who borrowed a kettle from someone and gave it back damaged.
Yeah.
And their argument for why they shouldn't be held responsible, basically, was multiple. He said that he'd returned the kettle undamaged.
Right.
That it was already damaged when he'd borrowed it, and that he'd never borrowed it in the first place.
Okay.
So,
and this was
kettle logic.
And this was illustrative of some sort of psychological meltdown on behalf of the person that he was talking about.
Freud was using it as an example of not of a good argument, but of an argument that is the kind that sometimes is used in court. Because basically it was kind of whichever one of the three options worked, you only needed one of the answers to be correct. So it gives you some defense, basically.
Okay.
But it's come to mean a situation where people give multiple reasons for something or multiple defenses, often which are mutually exclusive and kind of overlap each other in illogical ways. So we've got an example, of course, from Trump, which is a tweet that he sent just a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Yeah.
And it's when all the stuff about him losing so much money in the 80s and 90s came out, and he wanted to defend himself by claiming that actually he didn't really lose money. He was just committing tax fraud. So he tweeted, "You always wanted to show losses for tax purposes. Almost all real estate developers did, and often renegotiate with banks. It was sport. Additionally, the very old information put out is a highly inaccurate fake news hit job."
So they're all in there, aren't they?
So his argument for why his tax returns between 1985 and 1994 showed more than $1 billion loss was that you want to show losses for tax so that you don't have to pay tax. Everybody did it.
Yeah.
It was sport. So basically it was just, you know, it was fun. You get away with it. Also, it's very old information. And also, it's inaccurate. And it's a hit job from fake news.
Wow. Yeah. And the horrifying thing is that there's 20,000 likes of that. Wow. So, yeah, who are the people that are liking it? Other real estate developers from the 80s and 90s, probably. Yeah.
So the thing is that these things can't all be true. It can't both not have happened because it's fake news, have happened a long time ago because it's old information, and also have just been something that everyone did.
And also be inaccurate. Yeah. Well, it reminds me a bit of before where we talked about that ages ago, didn't we? Where Giuliani said, or is that your example? Giuliani said, it's not a crime. And it's even if he did commit it.
He didn't do it. And if he did it, it wasn't a crime.
Yeah.
It's similar to that. And in fact, we've got another example from Giuliani.
Oh, okay.
Where he is talking, in this instance, he's talking about Trump talking to Comey about letting the Flynn investigation go and what their defenses are for that.
Yep.
The president says, I never said to Flynn anything about...
I
never said to Comey anything about Flynn. Comey says, and he adds this at the very end, Comey says he told me to see if I could give him a break, basically. So we have three defenses to that. under Article 2 of the Constitution, you can't really question why the president would say something. He has the power to say it. Number two, what he was saying is perfectly justifiable. He didn't say, you must, you have to, I'll fire you if you don't. He said, consider it. Number three, he never said.
So it's great, isn't it? They always come in threes, don't they? There are three defenses.
Yeah.
There are three defenses for that.
Our defenses are threefold. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he won. He said that. He's allowed to say it. He didn't say that.
Yeah. 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 This is what he said. Yeah. And also, he didn't say it.
This is what he said. He's allowed to say what he said, and he didn't say it.
The thing is, what Giuliani is doing here is it's a lawyer thing. It's called arguing in the alternative. Yeah. And in a court, it makes some sense. When you're giving an interview, when you're talking on camera, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
When you're just trying to put your point across to the general public, basically. Yeah, it's a bad way of arguing. In a court, the reason that they do this is because you have these multiple arguments, because basically in this case, if you said the things he said were completely valid and okay for him to say, but that's if it's shown that he said it. And our argument is that he didn't say it.
Right.
So what that means is if you lose the argument that he said it, if they can somehow prove he said it, then you've still got that backup defense of it was okay to say the things he said.
So in a court of law, it's a very, which reminds me actually of Labour's position on the Brexit, on the second referendum for the Brexit deal, where they said if there are changes to the deal, then we will back it. There won't be changes to the deal, so there will then be a general election. If there isn't a general election, then we will punt for a second referendum. Well, because they've got Keir Starmer, who's a legal genius, on the team, kind of making those things clear. And you think, okay, as the cards get dealt and each hand is lost, then we've got a backup position and we're stating them. The problem is when you state them all in a row, they sound mutually exclusive and it's just confusing. So whilst it might be legally correct and, in terms of stating your position perfectly clear in a court of law, it does nothing but kind of increase the opacity of what the position is. Consequently, Labour's position on whether they actually back a second referendum needs a whole bunch of other things to happen before that occurs. So it's just people just like left them in droves. There have been resignations and people have voted for not them in the European elections as a result of that. So it's mad. It might well be legally clear, but as with many things that are legally clear, it's maddeningly unclear in normal everyday speech.
Yeah. So Giuliani's other example that you mentioned where he said he didn't do it and if he did it, it wasn't a crime.
Mm.
That's more this kind of standard arguing in the alternative thing that where, for example, in a murder case, you might say, I can show that my client wasn't at the scene of the murder. But if your evidence is only kind of circumstantial or it's not necessarily likely to convince the jury,
right?
Or if there's a chance they might not be convinced by it, then it's also really useful to say, even if he had been there, he wouldn't have been able to kill the person in this way. He wouldn't have had, access to the murder weapon or didn't know the combination of the safe or whatever. And that means that if you're basing your entire case on the fact he wasn't there and your evidence that he wasn't there is not convincing enough, then you're going to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to have that kind of extra backup that says, even if you're not convinced by the other thing I said, here are some other reasons why he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So you can kind of give Giuliani a little bit of leeway on this, but usually when this happens, this arguing in the alternative, it is more of a, you can't prove he did it. And if you can prove he did it, it wasn't a crime, rather than this is what he said. And also he didn't say it. They don't just butt up against each other. Yeah. They're exact opposites.
Exactly. Yeah. They're logically the different states. They are saying and not saying. Yeah. They are, X and not X. And you can't be both of those. Yeah. You just can't.
And now is the time, I think, for Marx's British politics corner.
So in this week of wonders, we've got to have a Theresa May clip and probably a Boris clip too. So just what we've been talking about, I think the problem in British politics is that nobody actually is a lawyer. I mean, the only lawyer is Keir Starmer, who's on the in the shadow cabinet. So I guess what I'm saying is Theresa May is shit at this, and because she doesn't listen to what she's saying. So in actually kind of listening to this back again, so the clip I'm about to play is from a press conference that was held on May 31st, 2017. So this is way back when they were just going into the general election that she had called in the hope to gain a increased majority, which give her the which would give her the mandate for going ahead with leaving the EU. And the question, so it's at the end of a long press conference of about 30 minutes. And the question then at the end of it is why she's not going to appear on TV to debate the current things with Jeremy Corbyn, who's the leader of the opposition. So as the leader of the Tory party, you would think that she would want to be involved in any debate about you know, what her position on things are on national television in order to not be empty chaired. So the voices, the questions are asked by people that we've heard of before: Faisal Islam from Sky News, Laura Kunzberg from BBC News, and Emily Morgan from ITV News. I've edited this to make it only a minute long, but it's well worth a listen on the show notes. You could go and listen to the whole damn thing. It's also great to look at the pictures because she does this horribly dead-eyed laugh, which is just great, but I've cut that out because it's too creepy.
If you're so strong and Jeremy Corbyn so weak, as you said, why have you sent Amber Rudd to take on his arguments at the debate tonight?
Well, I'm interested, you know, in the fact that Jeremy Corbyn seems to be paying far more attention to how many appearances on telly he's doing. I think he ought to be paying a little more attention to thinking about Brexit negotiations. That's what I'm doing to make sure we get the best possible deal for Britain.
On the same issue, public scrutiny is a very important part of any election campaign.
Yes, public scrutiny is for an election campaign, but that's why taking questions from members of the public who are going to be voting on the 8th of June is so important. But I think the other interesting question is, I feel sorry for ITV. Why didn't he do their debate?
Tonight you have a chance to reach millions of voters if you debated on television.
No, look, I've been very clear from the start that the sort of campaign I want to do is about taking questions, meeting people and taking questions. I've not been off the television screens. I've been doing things with in the television, but predominantly taking questions from the voters and listening to voters.
Yeah, so all over the place.
It is, yeah. And they are kind of, even within themselves, they're contradictory. If you check them against the real life, and so they're inconsistent with each other, but also inconsistent with the world. And the inconsistent with the world, she says Corbyn's more concerned with being on the telly. She's on the telly right now, than sorting out Brexit. And actually, he hasn't got to sort out Brexit. That's her job. You know, that's that being concerned with sorting out Brexit, they're both campaigning to be elected to run the government. So they shouldn't be sorting out Brexit right now anyway, because they're neither of them in power. So anyway, and then I love that bit when she says, and anyway, the most important thing is she feels sorry for ITV because he won't do their debate. So there was a time when this was going on, the BBC wanted to host the debate, and so did ITV. So they suggested that they do two rounds, one on each channel. And Corbyn said, well, I don't want to do ITV's one. And she's saying, you know, well, he doesn't want to do ITV. Well, you're not wanting to do the BBC one. That's no answer. This is where she does her creepy dead-eyed laugh, because the very next person is up from ITV. And she says, well, you've got this chance to talk. You're talking about wanting to speak to voters, and this is a chance to have millions of them answering, asking you questions and listening to what you've got to say. And she'd go, ah, well, you see, what she's actually not saying is that it was a very carefully stage-managed campaign that she did, where she went around saying strong and stable, I think was her catchphrase at this point.
Yeah, which I think was started out as Andrea Leadsom's phrase, didn't it?
I think it did, yeah, yeah.
She just kind of stole it after Andrea dropped out of the race.
Yeah, and proved to be neither of those. So, and nor is Andrea Leadsom. Well, we've yet to find out. She's currently in the running for the new leadership. And it also occurred to me, listening to this back, that it's somehow related in a way to moving the goalposts. On the face of it, it sounds like you're shifting the requirement of you're answering a different question. You're shifting the requirement of the questioner to, you know, make the case for the answer that you're giving. I thought, oh, maybe this is just moving the goalposts.
I think that it's more of a kind of ignoratio elenchi, missing the point. It's a way of answering the question that you want to answer. Yeah.
So we ought to have one from Boris, which is marvellous. So this is Boris Johnson. We love him. He's...
No, we don't. No.
No, we don't. No, not in any way, shape or form. We've talked about Boris before, way back when we were talking about bent bananas and straw men, when he was setting up the whole of the EU and EU regulations as a straw man, as a reason for leaving the EU. So he published an article in the Daily Telegraph on the 16th of March 2016, before the referendum's even begun. And here are his arguments for leaving the EU. And in this article, topmost in his reasons are because there are so many EU regulations that determine our laws for us, and we need to take back control and get some sovereignty back, because it's all gone to the EU because of these regulations. He's brought up in front of the Treasury Select Committee a week after he's published this thing, in order to explain this position and talk further on the truth of what he's asserting.
The EU Animal Byproducts Regulation of 2002 stated that stuff that had come into contact with milk or with meat could not be recycled. Cardiff Council decided to interpret the Animal Byproducts Regulation 2002 in such a way as to forbid people from recycling tea bags.
It's not true, though, is it, to say that there is an EU regulation or directive that prohibits people? It would be true to say that some regional authorities might have decided to gold-plate recycling tea bag.
I think you will readily appreciate, Mr. Tari, that without the Animal Byproducts Regulation of 2002, there would be no scope for the Council to institute that prohibition. There are a myriad of these things, and they are taken and used by UK officials, well, however well-meaning, in such a way as to add greatly to the burden of bureaucracy.
Taken and used by, or misused by, British officials on the back of something from the EU, which is not something which prohibits people from recycling tea bags, is it?
No, what it does...
It's a misrepresentation to say that people are prevented from recycling tea bags.
They are, by Cardiff Council, as a result legislation.
That's a much better description, which was unfortunately somehow omitted.
That is the whole point. And one of the interesting things about this country is that we are far more enthusiastic about implementing these regulations than others. We do relish this bureaucracy, I'm afraid, in this country, and we do tend to implement it in a very zealous way.
You'd rather change your line of fire from the article, which are attacking EU regulation and the actions of UK officials.
Disagree with you. I'm afraid I must respectfully disagree with you, Mr. Tari. Without the Animal Byproducts Regulation 2002, there would be no scope for the officials in question to enact this provision.
So it's horrible, isn't it? So it's just, you kind of think, oh my God, if he ends up being leader of our country, it's just bluff and bluster, isn't it? You kind of Thank God there is an adult. Now,
I may be going down a weird road that we don't want to go down here, but
yeah.
How are tea bags animal products?
Ah, well, I shall enlighten you
right.
on that moment. Brah! I've sounded like Boris there. What happens is that the regulation on animal byproducts from 2002 said that where there is a risk of disease and the spreading of diseases, then anything that's come into contact with animal byproducts like milk or meat shouldn't be put into an area of composting, which might lead to the disease being spread back into the food chain. And this was put into practice by Cardiff Council. So their council said, okay, in the whole of Wales, we are not going to allow people to compost tea bags because there was the risk that certainly that they would have come into contact with milk at the very least.
So first of all, if your tea bags are coming into contact with milk, you're doing it wrong. Take the tea bags out first before you put the milk in. Just make a proper rule. Make that people make tea proper.
That would solve everything. That would solve it. Yeah. That should be it.
Why did this not come up?
Well, because that's a UK rule rather than an EU rule. Yeah. How very British. How very British of you, Jim. Yeah. So, and the reason that they did that was because in 2005, it was to prevent the spread of foot and mouth disease. There was a foot and mouth disease outbreak in cattle in Wales, and I think in Scotland, and certainly the west of England, where possibly Ireland, where many, many thousands, tens of thousands of cattle were slaughtered because there was an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. The legislation that was put in place by Cardiff Council drew on the EU to give it some power, the regulation from the EU, in so such that they could prevent people from composting tea bags, amongst other things, anything that are coming into contact with meat, so that the foot and mouth disease wouldn't get put into landfill, for instance, or public compost sites, which end up leaching into the water table and so on and so forth. It seemed to me a perfectly reasonable thing to do, which is glossed over marvellously by Boris. He kind of holds this thing up to say, this is why we should leave, because they're stopping us composting tea bags. And then Andrew Tyrie, who is the adult in the room, he's the chair of the Treasury Select Committee, is saying, well, there is no such regulation. So Boris said, yes, there is a regulation. He said, no, there isn't. And he said, well, the thing is, it's got to have been there so that Cardiff could interpret it in this particular manner. And then he goes on to say, well, that's because we Brits love to embrace a bit of bureaucracy. And quite rightly, Andrew Tyrie goes, he said, so it's not about the regulation. It's about UK bureaucracy. And then he goes, well, I have to disagree with you. You go, well, no, you're just making a completely spurious point and your defence has shifted all over the place. And it's very weird.
So my take on this is that surely councils can tell you what to compost or what not to compost based on just their own opinion.
Well, yeah, quite. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's how that works. They have they don't have to have a rule.
No, exactly, yeah.
To interpret or misinterpret. So Cardiff, if they were looking to avoid the spread of foot and mouth and just say, don't compost tea bags.
Yeah.
First of all, make tea properly.
Yeah, exactly.
And then don't compost the bags.
I think actually the other weird thing in his article was he talked about recycling tea bags, and you kind of think, that's not okay. That's even worse, isn't it?
Okay.
Can you imagine that? You know,
you're just going to get
that
weak tea.
Yeah, weaker and weaker tea. That's not how to make tea, America. That's not how you do it.
No, it's one per person and one for the pot.
Oh yeah, it's got to be in a pot. Yeah, yeah.
Then,
which is why you have to milk afterwards.
It's in a teapot.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah,
God, this is why you have to follow the rules.
Yeah, you don't put it in the cup. That's right.
No, that's the problem with Britain today. No teapots.
It's a problem. They don't follow the rules. It's a wild There we go, White Stripes there with Seven Nation Army. And that's a little plug there for Jeremy Corbyn. There was this phenomenon last summer or the summer before, 2017, during the, 2017. So during the election process that we've just heard about, the football crowds and festival goers adopted that as the theme where they were just singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn" to it. And it, you know, we need to get that going again. Because we need him in power. Yeah, there we go.
So in The Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And we start off with, I think, the shortest clip we've ever played, which is from The Simpsons.
Mm. In fact, actually, I did pull a Giuliani and slow it down slightly because otherwise it'd be really short. Yeah, and you could, yeah, but here we go.
I didn't do it. Nobody saw me do it. There's no way they can prove anything.
Bart summing up the whole of Giuliani's position, really, isn't it? I didn't do it. Nobody saw me doing it. Yeah. And
I mean, that's fairly classic.
You can't prove it anyway. Yeah.
All those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
If he didn't do it, then nobody would have seen him do it. And nobody would be able to prove anything. So
yes,
they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Nor or contradictory.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So exactly. So our second example is from A Few Good Men, which is genuinely one of my favourite films.
Oh, right. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely brilliant. I love it. And it's one of those films that when it comes on TV, I think I'll just watch a bit of this and then I end up watching the entire thing.
Yeah.
So this scene is from where Jack Nicholson's character, Nathan Jessup, ends up actually on the stand testifying. And Tom Cruise's character, Daniel Caffey, first of all, he starts off by just going through some of the groundwork and getting Jessup to say some of the orders that he gave.
Colonel, at the time of this meeting, you gave Lieutenant Kendrick an order. Is that right?
I told Kendrick to tell his men that Santiago wasn't to be touched.
And did you give an order to Colonel Markinson as well?
I ordered Markinson to have Santiago transferred off the base immediately.
Why?
I felt his life might be in danger once word of the letter got out.
Grave danger?
Is there another kind?
So Tom Cruise has got Jack Nicholson to admit that he ordered this troublesome Marine who in the film has been killed. He ordered that his fellow Marines were not to touch him. And he also ordered that he be sent away and off the base. Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel Caffey, the Tom Cruise character, goes through a little bit of stuff claiming that the flight that the Marine was booked on wasn't the first one out. And he's got these witnesses coming in that he can prove it. And then he comes back after he's kind of rattled Jessup a bit. He comes back to focus on those orders again.
A moment ago, you said that you ordered Lieutenant Kendrick to tell his men that Santiago wasn't to be touched.
That's right.
And Lieutenant Kendrick was clear on what you wanted?
Crystal.
Any chance Lieutenant Kendrick ignored the order?
Ignored the order?
Any chance he forgot about it?
No.
Any chance Lieutenant Kendrick left your office and said, "The old man is wrong"?
No.
When Lieutenant Kendrick spoke to the platoon and ordered them not to touch Santiago, any chance they ignored him?
You ever served in an infantry unit, son?
No, sir.
Ever served in a forward area?
No, sir.
Ever put your life in another man's hands? Asked him to put his life in yours?
No, sir.
We follow orders, son. We follow orders or people die. It's that simple. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Are we clear?
Crystal. Colonel, I have just one more question before I call Airman O'Malley and Airman Rodriguez. If you gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, and your orders are always followed, then why would Santiago be in danger? Why would it be necessary to transfer him off the base?
Santiago was a substandard Marine. He was being transferred.
That's not what you said. You said he was being transferred because he was in grave danger.
That's correct.
You said he was in danger. I said grave danger. You said, is there any?
I recall what I said.
I can have the court reporter read back to you.
I know what I said. I don't have to have it read back to me like I'm.
Why did two orders? Colonel?
Sometimes men take matters into their own hands.
No, sir. You made it clear just a moment ago that your men never take matters in their own hands. Your men follow orders or people die. So Santiago shouldn't have been in any danger at all, should he have, Colonel?
You snotty little bastard.
It's a brilliant scene. I love it. So
it's great.
By getting him to be so very clear and strong on the fact that his orders are always followed, he absolutely sets him up for the rebuttal of that argument that he needed to be removed from the base in case he was in danger. Because those two arguments don't work together. Mm. They're incompatible.
Yep. Yep.
And so by giving those two answers in the explanation that was happening to this Marine, Jessup kind of hung himself. So Caffey did the brilliant kind of way of
there is the counter catalogic
here, which is to point out why if those things were both true, it wouldn't work, and so that doesn't make any sense.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that's it. If only we could all end up being more like Tom Cruise, be more like Andrew Tyrie and Tom Cruise, and less like Boris Johnson.
It's a noble goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we move on to fake news this week, there's just time to remind you about the Trump Deadpool competition that we've got running on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump. You've still got time. The 1st of June is the deadline to get your picks in. If you didn't hear about this last time, it's that there is a list of 50 officials and people in the Trump administration, and you have to pick 10 of them that you think might get fired or resign by January of next year. And if the ones you pick do get fired or resign, then you get points.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had to update the list again this week.
Yeah.
Because John DeStefano has resigned.
Gone already.
And one of the people who'd already submitted their picks did pick him.
Wow.
I had to get them to change it because he's leaving office before the official beginning of the competition. The competition officially begins on the 1st of June. So although this person did very well in picking John DeStefano, unfortunately,
exactly,
they don't get any points for it.
Because that's going to be the thing. 1st of June's a long way away, you know.
It's a few days, yeah.
Which, as we know, is a long time in politics. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, do sign up. As one of our group members says, this is kind of the equivalent of a one of those fantasy sport activities things, but it's the same mode as
For people who aren't into sport, they can get into this.
Picking your best team, you can pick people from the Deadpool. Yeah.
So go to facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump. Sign up. All the information is there. You can go directly to the list at fallacioustrump.com/Deadpool. And by the 20th of January next year, whoever has the most points gets some Fallacious Trump merch.
Yeah. So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
So yeah, just like to point out at this juncture that A, I haven't lost. B, even if I have lost, I've not lost by many, and not winning 16 out of the 24 isn't actually many.
That's fair.
It's my kettle logic defense there. That's right. Yeah. So I'm currently on 8 out of 24.
Yes.
Which is...
Yeah, you are, which is exactly chance.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You could roll the dice and get the same score. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So the theme this week is subpoenas, because there's been a few of those flying.
Hey, yeah.
So statement one, Trump said, she got a subpoena from the United States Congress. She said, "Whoa, we have a problem." She deleted and bleached. Nobody bleaches. Sophisticated people said, "We've never heard of it." You know why? Because it's such an expensive process. So she deleted and she bleached 33,000 emails.
Mm-hmm.
Statement number two. The Democrats can subpoena me and my administration for the next 10, 15, 20 years, and we will never capitulate. They need to face the fact that I'm in charge. This is my country, and I will do as I please. They have no control over me. The people support me and will always support me.
Yep.
And statement number three. My son was totally exonerated by Mueller, who, frankly, does not like Donald Trump. Me. This Donald Trump. And frankly, for my son, after being exonerated, to now get a subpoena to go again and speak again after close to 20 hours of telling everybody that would listen about a nothing meeting.
Okay. Who, frankly, doesn't like Donald Trump? Me. This Donald Trump. Because nobody likes the other one. Yeah. frankly, who doesn't like them? Well, yeah, you know, yeah. There's hands up here. Okay, she got subpoenaed. That one sounds like a... Yeah, that... deleted and bleached. Nobody bleaches. Sophisticated people. Okay, that sounds like an early TV debate job. Okay, Democrats with... I need to fake the fact that I'm in charge. This is my country, and I'll do as I please. They have no control. I so want that to be real. Okay. See, I think number three is probably true. Number one, I've got a feeling you said that. I think number two is the one that you made up.
Okay. So of the other two, which are you most confident about?
I think number three I'm more confident about.
Okay. So number three is?
Yeah.
Real.
My son was totally exonerated by Mueller, who frankly does not like Donald Trump, me, this Donald Trump. And frankly, for my son, after being exonerated, to now get a subpoena to go again and speak again after close to 20 hours of telling everybody that would listen about a nothing meeting.
Oh, hello. So, yeah, right. So because didn't Donald Trump, the other Donald Trump, didn't he actually say there wasn't a meeting? There was, or is it, yeah.
Yeah. No, there wasn't. Well, at first it was that there wasn't a meeting. And then they said there was a meeting, but it wasn't about Russia.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, there was a meeting.
But it was about
Russia.
The election.
But it wasn't, it was about, it didn't go into detail about Hillary. It was about adoption and stuff like that.
Well, that in itself sounds like a kettle logic defense as well, doesn't it?
Well, I think there is definitely an overlap. And I think the difference is largely the time frame. Because the shifting stories about that meeting, which largely happened, they happened over a period of time in response often to new evidence coming out. So when a newspaper reported that actually we can show it did happen, they said, okay, yeah, it did happen, but this is the new story. With kettle logic, it seems especially kind of potent when it's all...
You've got to do it all at once.
Yeah, it's all in one go.
Yeah.
So when you're presenting all of the arguments at one time and they don't necessarily fit together with each other.
Didn't we do it? We did a slippery slope on or was that Moving Goalposts?
It was Moving the Goalposts special, about that. It was episode 8.
Yeah, they just hurtled up and down the whole playing field. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, so I love that. And you kind of think, look, if this was true, what he said in that one, that once you listen to somebody and they've spoken to you for 20 hours, to everybody who would listen, you kind of think if that was true, there would be no detective TV series at all when they call back the guy and say, oh, yeah, there's all like Columbo would be. Yeah, it wouldn't happen, would it? Because his thing was, oh, yeah, just one more thing. I want to ask you another question. You know, you think, no, you can't. You've had your questions. That's it. And you go, well, you've got to do that. The show will be over.
Yeah. I mean, in this quote, I think Trump is kind of implying, I think, that the exoneration by Mueller, which wasn't an exoneration, happened after he spent 20 hours talking to Mueller.
Right.
Which didn't happen at all. Don Jr. refused to speak to Mueller.
Ah.
He did not choose to voluntarily be interviewed by Mueller.
Yeah.
And he wasn't exonerated. Mueller found that he was too stupid to commit the crime that he was definitely committed.
That's right.
So Donald Trump Jr. talked to Congress about the Russia meeting, but that was before all of the stuff in the Mueller report came out. Yep. So now Congress wants to talk to him again to say, okay, how come you told us this stuff?
They want to talk to him about that.
Yeah, and the Mueller report says
this.
So it's totally justified.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And to do that, so there's a whole bunch of cherry picking and everything going on in that statement, isn't there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So statement number one you think is real. And statement number one is?
Yeah.
Real.
She got a subpoena from the United States Congress. She said, whoa, we have a problem. She deleted and bleached. Nobody bleaches.
Sophisticated people said we've never heard of it. You know why? Because it's such an expensive process. So she deleted and she bleached 33,000 emails.
So he said this a number of times about her bleaching.
Yep.
He said she acid washed them. He's described it in a number of ways. And again, multiple times he said that sophisticated people who know this world, who were in IT, have never heard of this thing because it's so expensive. So how expensive do you think the bleaching that happened was?
As much as buying, I don't know, like $2?
Well, what she did, or what her IT people did, after deleting emails, which is standard practice, to free up space, was that they used a free program called BleachBit. That is available on like app stores and, you know, open source. It's not some kind of weird underground thing that only hackers have access to. It doesn't use bleach or acid or chemicals in any way.
Not
it
sophisticated
just like
people.
It's a space recoverer.
No, exactly. Oh, no.
Oh, no. So that's it. That's the expensive bleaching process that she went through. Yeah. It was like the free program called BleachBit.
Because when you delete stuff, all it does is just take the header information off the file. It doesn't remove it off the disk. So you have to go back and it selects all the ones with missing headers and then deletes them completely, which actually does free up the space, marks it as empty. Yeah. So not that I've been a hacker at any point in my life. I just happened to work in IT a long time ago. So, it's interesting, isn't it, that he knows a lot about technology, and yet both of his metaphors involve liquid, and the last thing you want to do is pour bleach or acid wash into your hard disk.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah, that's And do you know why nobody's ever heard of it? Because you just made it up. That's why. Such an expensive process. Well, that's because people are saying, "Well, we can do that for you, Donald, but it will cost you $1 million."
It will cost you a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means that you've won this week.
Hey!
Because statement number two is fake news.
Oh, I so wanted it to say that.
In fact, I didn't make up this statement. It's one that's been going around the internet for the last few days.
Right.
People have been forwarding it on as if it's real.
Yeah.
And someone basically took a screenshot from Fox News and put this quote next to Donald Trump's head and a chyron saying something like, "Trump goes ballistic on fake Fox News."
Underneath.
Yeah, and it's not true. He didn't say it.
But
many people, it's easy to believe. That's the problem. It's the kind of thing that you think he probably thinks, although he hasn't, he hasn't,
he hasn't
said it. At least he hasn't said it yet.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I think the giveaway is he would never use the word capitulate.
No.
He definitely doesn't know what that word means.
That's the only bit.
Whoever came up with this basically needed to do a bit more work.
Yeah.
On sounding like Trump. Which means that you're now on 9 out of 25.
Hey!
Which is, I believe, 36%.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's right. So you're creeping up.
Yeah.
You're above chance.
It's at the highest I've been.
It might be the highest, yeah. Yeah. So personal best.
Cool. All right.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called Temper Tantrums Are Not a Logical Fallacy, because this is where we talk about all the crazy stuff that's happened in the White House. But the craziest thing this week is Trump's bizarre Rose Garden press conference after he stormed out of the infrastructure meeting with Pelosi. He was supposed to go in there and talk about presumably how they were going to implement and spend the $1 trillion that has been allocated to infrastructure.
Yeah.
And
by his own admission, he likes infrastructure. It's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's his thing. He's a builder. So, nobody knows infrastructure like he does, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, apparently he went into that meeting. I think the meeting was for 11 a.m. Around that time. And about then, Sarah Sanders let the press know that there was going to be a press conference in the Rose Garden at 20 past 11. So it seems like it was pretty clear that the meeting was not going to go on for long. Trump went into the meeting, didn't sit down, didn't shake anyone's hand. He went to the head of the table and just basically said, I'm not going to do anything with you. I'm not going to do any infrastructure with you while you're investigating me. And that's it. He just stormed out, went straight to the Rose Garden and gave this, I'm not sure you can really call it a press conference so much as just a kind of a tantrum.
Yeah. It's a tantrum. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just complaining about people investigating him and that he'd been accused of covering up. Pelosi particularly accused him of being engaged in a cover up. And he said, I don't do cover ups.
No, I'm the most transparent person in the world.
Yeah. Again, he claimed this.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, certainly bits of him are. His hair is, for instance. Yeah. But yeah.
I don't think he's disputed anymore by anyone that he paid off Stormy Daniels. So that's definitely a cover up.
Exactly.
So to say he doesn't do cover ups, he's just gaslighting now. I mean, he's been gaslighting for a while, but claiming to be the most transparent president in like the history of America is just insane.
And also saying that you can't, you know, I can't be doing legislature whilst I'm being investigated, and you think, well, Nixon managed it. That was, you know, he was able to do it whilst being investigated. You know, it's just because you can't multitask.
Well, yeah, he's not even claiming that. He's claiming that the Democrats can't legislate while they're investigating.
Okay.
He's saying, in a way, it would have been a better argument if he'd said, while I'm having to fight all this unfair stuff, I can't get on with the work of being president. But yeah, he's saying that the House.
I haven't got the time for it.
Yeah, he's saying the House, the Democrats who are in charge of the House, can't be doing the stuff that they should be doing if they're busy doing investigations.
What, like calling a meeting to talk about the infrastructure?
Exactly.
For instance.
Yeah, they can't do that.
Can't be doing that.
In fact, the meeting went on without him.
Yeah.
So Pelosi stayed and talked to the other people who were there, including Kellyanne Conway, who apparently asked Pelosi if she had any kind of response to what the president had said. And Pelosi said that she would wait and tell the president her response and not talk to the staff about it.
Yeah.
And Kellyanne Conway apparently snapped back at her and said, way to be pro-women. So there was a bit of a catfight in the infrastructure meeting, apparently.
What? You think that's a very Trump missing of the point going on there, isn't it? That's fantastic, isn't it? See, and the other thing that I realised that Trump actually can't do multitasking himself because he can't speak and keep his teeth in at the same time. You can tell when he's getting a bit riled up because his bottom teeth move around independently of his face. And
it really is rich that he's kind of complaining about how other people talk sometimes. And then.
Exactly. Yeah. Part of the reason he kind of only talks out of that, you know, the small aperture that he makes by pursing his lips is because he's holding
his face.
Exactly. That speaking out of a cat's ass is because he's trying to hold his teeth in. You know, just get some glue, man. It's doable. Such things exist.
Yeah, I mean, he could afford the best glue.
The best glue. He could then admit to doing the best dentures, and when he gets finally out of jail in 20 years' time, Dentufix can call him up as a, you know, and say if he ate things that had calcium in them
instead of just KFC, you know,
then he wouldn't have a problem. Yeah. Which has made me think about milkshakes and those being thrown around.
Yes, that's brilliant, isn't it?
In the UK at politicians.
Yeah, milkshakes become kind of weapon of fear now.
Yeah.
So
people who
stand watching Brexit MPs doing stuff, holding milkshakes.
Yeah, exactly. Sufficient that Farage wouldn't get off the bus because of the threat. There were reports that were relayed to him that there were people outside with milkshakes. Yeah. Having been plastered with one that turned out to be a salted caramel milkshake that cost
from Five Guys. I mean, that's really expensive.
I know. Who
Get
knew?
A cheap milkshake if you're going to throw it. I mean, maybe it was just a spur of the moment thing, but that's an expensive
I think it was,
milkshake.
Yeah. And he said, actually, I was looking forward to drinking it, but it seemed a lot, you know, given the nonsense that Farage spouts, it seemed like a good investment. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so,
dear.
So Trump, while he was complaining, moaning basically about how unfair it is that he's being held to account for his crimes, he said yeah. basically the Pelosi and the Democrats are talking about the big I word.
Right.
Like impeachment is like Voldemort. And
you just have to imply it.
You can't say it outright because so if you say it three times, it'll happen.
That's right, yeah. I mean, you know, a man in a stripy jacket will turn up, yeah.
Yeah, 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 it's like Beetlejuice,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What, the I word? Nobody says the I word. When he said it, when I was listening to the speech and he goes, oh, yeah, talk about the I word, I think he... What is that? Immigration? What? What are you talking about? You know, the iPad? Is that like a new...
Well, it's not infrastructure.
No.
That's for sure.
No. Which actually, ironically, is what they were talking about. Yeah. What the hell? I did think that, oh, maybe it's a new Apple product, the iWord, but yeah, which no. And the other thing was, given that it was a spontaneous... you know, he stormed out and just kind of went off and spoke to the press. So it's just in a kind of spontaneous manner that there was the placard below his lectern, which kind of had had the numbers, had the size of the words the wrong way around. So on the right-hand side, it's got no collusion and what was the other?
No obstruction.
Yeah. Surely you'd want... them to be big and the no to be little, and the otherwise you just go.
Well, you want to have the no visible as well. You don't want to have like collusion obstruction. That would be bad.
Well, yeah, but it is like it's 10 times the size.
Yeah, know? It's hard to see.
What? Yeah.
But apparently those they had those placards from before. They'd been printed for some other purpose before, like weeks ago, and they just happened to have them lying around the Oval Office, and someone thought, yeah, this would be good. Let's put that up on the lectern. Right. So that was fun.
It was. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
25 white Republican men in Alabama just passed a law making all abortion illegal in the state with no exception for rape or incest. You can tell this is extreme because even televangelist slash crypt keeper Pat Robertson says they've gone too far. To be fair, Pat's objections are only that he thinks this case would lose if it went to the Supreme Court, so they should just be less obvious about their efforts to control women's bodies. I've got an idea. If you want to reduce abortions, how about compulsory vasectomies for all men? You freeze some sperm at 18 and then you get the snip. What's that? You don't think it's okay to legislate what men can do with their bodies? Well, fuck off then.
Great news. Theresa May will still be Prime Minister when Trump visits the UK. But only just. He arrives on the 3rd of June. She hands in her notice on the 7th. After a hectic week in May's Britain, including another scuppered attempt to bring the zombie withdrawal agreement before Parliament for the fourth time, this time it didn't even make it as far as the printer, two ministers resigned ahead of the European elections on Thursday, in which members of her own party predict they will win no seats at all, and which they see as a failing that the elections happened anyway. Theresa May this morning announced she'd be handing back the keys to Larry, the number 10 cat. He now has his work cut out, fending off the rats, queuing to get in to replace her. Well, let's hope he gets some good practice in fighting the cat on Trump's head.
To be fair, I think the cat on Trump's head has been dead for a couple of decades. So. I hope Trump was tired of winning because he had a very bad few days last week. On Monday, the New York Times reported that money laundering specialists at Deutsche Bank flagged suspicious activity on both Trump and Jared Kushner's accounts, but bank executives refused to alert the government and fired one of the employees who raised concerns. On the same day, Judge Amit Mehta ruled that accounting firm Mazars must turn over Trump's financial records, and if Trump appeals the ruling, the case will be heard by a judge named Merrick Garland. On Tuesday, the Post reported that a draft memo they obtained from the IRS says that handing over Trump's tax returns to the Ways and Means Committee is, quote, mandatory. And on Wednesday, a federal judge rejected a request by Trump to block a congressional subpoena for his banking records, and the New York State Legislature approved a bill that would allow them to turn over Trump's state taxes to Congress on request. Lucky he's so transparent, or some of these things might bother him a little bit.
Do you think? Yeah. Compassionate and mindful as ever, Rudy Giuliani first pokes fun at Nancy Pelosi in a doctored video that makes her slur her speech to make her seem drunk, and then kind of sort of apologizes in a bizarre tweet that actually seems to emulate the very thing he trolled Pelosi for. And I quote, Ives' apology for a video which is allegedly is a caricature of an otherwise halting speech pattern she should first stop and apologize for, saying the president needs an intervention. New sentence. End of tweet. Thus exhibiting the kind of 9:13 a.m. already downed a bottle of Jack at work behaviour that in itself surely requires an intervention. Giuliani, putting the rude in Rudy, using self-referential prose Samuel Beckett will be proud of, and raising awareness in Mental Health Week by getting everyone else to call Nurse Ratched.
Republican Congressman Justin Amash took a whole month to read the Mueller report. So, congratulations, Justin, for being apparently the first Republican to actually finish it. And double congratulations for being the only Republican to be honest about its contents. Amash released a stream of tweets on May 18th describing Trump's actions as, quote, inherently corrupt and calling for his impeachment. Since then, he stood firm in the face of condemnation from donors, Trump himself, and several Republicans who have questioned his allegiance to the party. Maybe we should do the No True Scotsman fallacy next.
Great news! Trump is to introduce a language and civics test for new US citizens, much like we actually have in the UK. Similarly, future residency applicants would have to exhibit knowledge of US history and spoken English. Great news, of course, as the man who brought you oranges and orangins, Covfefe and hamburger, and thinks Washington didn't have anything to show for his life, would thus have to leave. Oh no, special pleading.
Donald Trump Jr. has been offered a book deal, and not one of those three books for $5 deals, because let's face it, there's no way he could read three books. No, they actually want him to write one, just like Trump actually wrote The Art of the Deal all by himself. Junior says the book will highlight the great achievements of his father's administration, so it should be a pretty short read. No decision has been made on a title yet, but I hear a front runner is, "Look, Daddy, I made a book. Do you love me now?"
Three pictures and two words. I've just put up a fence at a total of about $39.90 for each 8 feet, which, if I were lucky enough to have a yard the size of, say, the Mexican border, works out at $44,767.80 for 1.7 miles. Yeah, home improvement can be a bit pricey. In other news, on Tuesday, Attorney Douglas Letter said in a court filing updating U.S. District Judge Hayward Gilliam that Customs and Border Protection has now constructed 1.7 miles of fencing with its fiscal year 2018 funding. This refers to the $1.57 billion that Congress appropriated last year for Trump's wall along the Mexican border. According to the CBP report, $6.1 billion in funding has been committed since 2017 for the wall, both to Customs Border Protection and the Defense Department, for 336 miles. So that's 334.3 miles left to do, with $4.53 billion to spend doing it. At the current rate, that'll only buy another 2.8 miles. Sounds like they're going to have to go to Home Depot just like I did.
Yeah, I think if they were to put it across the entire border at that price, it would cost somewhere in the region of about $1.8 trillion.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Wow. Wow.
I think they are going to have to make it cheaper somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that, or they could use that to go to the moon rather than taking it away from students. Yeah.
I mean, they could build a space ladder for that, probably.
They could, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It, and back again. It could have an escalator. It could have a...
I mean, ladders, generally, you can just come down the same one you went up.
So. No, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but what if it's crowded because people are going up the other one?
True.
We just walk down the other side, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. You can find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
And if you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump.
You can also connect with us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallaciouStrump, where you can enter our Trump Deadpool competition.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So till next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.